Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
So glad you could be with us for this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry. With me today is Eric Johnson, my colleague at MRM. And we are continuing our look at a statement that is posted on the LDS.org website. It was posted in December of 2013, titled Plural Marriage and Families in Early Utah. And as we mentioned yesterday, you wouldn't think that there'd be a whole lot of new things to learn from the Mormon Church on this issue, but apparently they are admitting to some things that probably surprise even many members of the LDS Church. Now, if you studied this subject for any amount of time, I don't think you'd be totally shocked. But we still thought it would be interesting to go through some of the comments on this statement and just offer our commentary regarding some of the things that it says. So yesterday we were talking about the manifesto, and I was making the comment that I find it interesting that the manifesto admittedly was nothing more than a statement that was given by Wilford Woodruff. Now they call it an inspired statement, but they come short of calling it a revelation. They don't call it a revelation. In fact, I've never even seen any such revelation that was supposedly given by God to Wilford Woodruff to bring plural marriage to a halt. We do find that he was inspired, to a certain extent, to stop practicing polygamy because he saw in vision, and this is the word that he uses, in vision of what the consequences would be if they didn't stop practicing plural marriage. Because the federal government at this time was focusing its attention on Utah, and they were going to shut them down. They were already starting to confiscate property. And Wilford Woodruff knew that if they did not do something, if they did not acquiesce to the demands of the federal government, the Mormon Church would be in a lot of trouble, and the leadership would probably be thrown into prison. And for this reason, they decided that it better come to a halt. There was no revelation that we can see. And even this statement comes short of saying that. It does not say it was a revelation. It was a statement, though they say that the Lord inspired Wilford Woodruff to issue this statement to end plural marriage. It was not a revelation. And what I was bringing out yesterday, and I still think is interesting, is they don't need a revelation to end the practice of polygamy, which even to this day, the Mormon Church admits it was a doctrine. But when it came to the priesthood ban, that they're now saying was nothing but based on folklore and theory.
Priesthood banned for the
priesthood
blacks.
For the blacks.
Yeah.
That needed a revelation.
Yeah.
That's just mind-boggling to me. It just makes no sense. If it wasn't really doctrine, you wouldn't need a revelation to reverse it. But it's just an interesting bit of Mormon history.
It is.
We go on in the statement.
The third paragraph reads, after the manifesto, monogamy was advocated by the church both over the pulpit and through the press. On an exceptional basis, some new plural marriages were performed between 1890 and 1904, especially in Mexico and Canada outside the jurisdiction of U.S. law. A small number of plural marriages were performed within the United States during those years. In 1904, the church strictly prohibited new plural marriages. Today, any person who practices plural marriage cannot become or remain a member of the church.
I find that interesting where it says in 1904, the church strictly prohibited new plural marriages.
I thought that was 1890.
Yeah, if you didn't know about 1904, you would have thought 1890 was the year that they strictly prohibited new plural marriages. No, they did promise the government, but they were still doing it behind the government's back. And what's fascinating about this is these are the very leaders of the Mormon Church, the very leaders that you would think that honesty is always the best policy. But yet they promise the government one thing,
yeah,
and then they purposely do just the opposite. Folks, there's no other word. They lied to the government about this.
And this isn't new news. I mean, one book that I think does a great job talking about the polygamy that took place between 1890 and 1904 would be Richard Van Wagner's book, Mormon Polygamy. He spends a whole section talking about this. But I don't know, Bill, maybe I'm wrong on this. I've never seen anything on LDS.org where it admits that polygamy was taking place after the Lord supposedly inspired Church President Wilford Woodruff to issue that statement.
And I do remember years ago, Mormons arguing that the 1890 manifesto brought it to a halt. And when I brought up the fact that that wasn't true, that there were marriages that took place afterwards, Mormons would argue with me on that. They would say, oh, that's not true. That's not true. And so I would have to show them, you know, the research that we have done on this, that in fact that did happen. In fact, in our new Answering Mormons Questions, we talk about this.
Sure.
And we mention when it says, for instance, on the statement, it says, on an exceptional basis, some new plural marriages were performed between 1890 and 1904. This word exceptional becomes vague because I don't know what they mean exceptional. Do you mean exceptional in regard to the entire population of the LDS Church at that time or what? Because if that's the case, well, yeah, it would have been exceptional. It would have been out of the norm given the whole membership of the church for somebody to be married in a plural relationship. But as we point out in Answering Mormons Questions, there were quite a few leaders in the church that were actually married in a plural relationship after 1890. On page 65 of Answering Mormons Questions, we have the numbers by Kenneth L. Cannon in the last paragraph there. What does it say?
Yeah, this is under our chapter 6. Why do so many equate our church to splinter groups when we no longer practice polygamy? That's the question a Mormon might ask. And so here's the information you just gave. Kenneth L. Cannon notes, as early as 1893, however, new plural marriages were performed in Mexico, an idea initially proposed by George Q. Cannon.
George Q. Cannon was a member of the First Presidency. Mm-hmm. He is a top guy. Okay, he's not some flunky in the Mormon Church.
Woodruff agreed with his first counselor's idea, letting Cannon direct this new polygamy so that he would not participate directly as church president.
Notice the arm's length distance here. The plausible deniability. Folks, we see this all the time when we look at Mormon history. There always seems to be this bit of plausible deniability peppered throughout Mormon history, and here is a case of it.
Cannon's responsibility included choosing and setting apart certain church leaders to perform the marriages. In that year, at least two couples were married in Mexico, apparently with the approbation of Wilford Woodruff and his two counselors. Throughout the mid-1890s, the following scenario was repeated on numerous occasions. Again, that comes from Kenneth L. Cannon. And then, according to Cannon, quote, among the Quorum of the Twelve in the First Presidency between 1890 and 1898, at least 58% of the members took an active part in post-manifesto polygamy. 58%
among the Quorum of the Twelve in the First Presidency. And these are the leaders that a lot of Mormon members look to as the epitome of virtue and righteousness. And here are these men telling the government at one point, we're not going to do this anymore, and then turning right around and doing it in outright defiance to the promise that they made to the government.
I mean, 6 out of 10 of these leaders were doing it after they had promised the U.S. government they wouldn't do it any longer.
That should be problematic for any member of the LDS Church. However, I can imagine that a lot of Mormons would probably justify that by saying, well, yeah, but you've got to understand, we believed at that time that this was a revelation from God, and the government was acting unrighteously in prohibiting us from participating in what they called the principle. That's probably how they would justify at that time. But still, if you're going to make a promise, you would think in most cases you would probably keep it. Otherwise, just defy it outright. Go to jail. Like some of them did go to jail.
Yeah.
There's a restaurant right down the street from my house here that has a big, huge picture in it of George Q. Cannon sitting in his prison garb, surrounded by other polygamists. Well, and I remember asking one of the young men who worked at that restaurant if they knew who he was. He says, oh, he just knew it was some Mormon guy. That's all he knew. But you know, that's George Q. Cannon, who's a member of the First Presidency.
If you want to see that picture, let's give a shout out to Chuck Arama. Latter-day Saints do not understand all of God's purposes for instituting through his prophets the practice of plural marriage during the 19th century.
Now, let's stop there because there's a key word in here that I think excuses the Mormons on this, but I don't think it can excuse them entirely. Latter-day Saints do not understand all of God's purposes for instituting, through his prophets, the practice of plural marriage during the 19th century. Maybe the Mormons don't know all of God's purposes. And they kind of played this game when it came to the blacks as well, not getting the priesthood. We don't really know all the reasons, but certainly some leaders knew at least some of the reasons why. And of course, they pinned that on behavior in the pre-existence, which of course the Mormon Church is denying now. But when they say that we don't understand all of God's purposes for plural marriage, that seems to be playing a little bit fast and loose with the facts, because Mormon leaders such as Brigham Young certainly did understand the reasons. In fact, he even said so in the Journal of Discourses, Volume 11, page 269. He says, "I heard the revelation on polygamy, and I believed it with all my heart, and I know it is from God. I know that he revealed it from heaven. I know that it is true and understand the bearings of it and why it is." And of course, one of the reasons of why it is because he taught, as did other Mormon leaders during that time period, that that was the order of heaven, that God himself was a practicing polygamist.
He says on that same page, on page 269, the only men who become gods, even the sons of God, are those who enter into polygamy. So he understood it was a salvation issue.
Oh, exactly, because he also said in the Journal of Discourses in volume 6, page 282, and he said this on August 29th, 1852, "It is connected with the exaltation of man," which goes along with what you just said, "showing how he becomes exalted to be a king and a priest, yea, even a god, like his Father in heaven. Without the doctrine that this revelation reveals, no man on earth ever could be exalted to be a god." So certainly, plural marriage was a salvific issue. If a Mormon hoped to become a god during that period of Mormonism, he would have to be engaged in the practice of plural marriage. It was necessary for exaltation. Now, Mormons do not believe that today, but certainly that was one of the reasons why, according to Brigham Young, we have to assume God revealed to him that that was why this should be practiced. So when they say that they don't understand all of God's purposes, that's not really telling the whole story.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism. Is there not much of a difference between Mormonism and Christianity? Well, actually, despite what many may think, there is. And when it comes to this sensitive and even highly charged issue that has eternal ramifications, the Christian may not know where to turn. Just trying to understand the Mormons' beliefs can be both confusing and frustrating. That's why Mormonism 101 was written, a book resource by Mormonism Research Ministries' Bill McKeever and Eric Johnson that contrasts vital doctrines such as who is God, what is Scripture, and how a person is able to go to heaven. When the two religions are placed side by side, the differences are many. Mormonism 101 is a tool that will help you better understand the doctrines of your Latter-day Saint friend, family member, or co-worker. And it even has witnessing tips available to help you in future conversations. Published by Baker Books, Mormonism 101 is available at mrm.org or ask for it at your favorite Christian bookstore. As 1 Peter 3 says, always be prepared to give an answer.